Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're excited to have with us Dr. Leanne Dickerson from here really close to us in Georgia. And Leanne was raised in a home that was very active in ministry to children and the poor. Dr. Dickerson completed her Doctor of Psychology degree from Regent University in Virginia, where her graduate training really focused on integrating faith with psychology, so she utilizes that regularly. She's been working in the mental health field for over 20 years and is a licensed clinical psychologist in both Georgia and Virginia. So Leanne moved to Georgia in 2017 with her husband and her son, and I was cracking up talking to her because she's figuring out how important SEC football is. And around Atlanta, she's figuring out how to use the Waze app because the traffic is so bad. But thankfully, she was already prepared for Georgia because she was a Chick-fil-A super fan. So
you got that right.
We're super happy to have her here today.
Yeah, thanks for being with us today, Leanne.
Thank you.
Yeah. So since the beginning of time, we know that stories have been used to help us communicate. We see it in the Bible. We see Jesus use parables and stories and to connect with each other, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's something powerful about sharing a part of yourself with another. And because when you do that, you feel understood, you feel valued, and you feel connected.
That's right.
And I know this is where you're coming from today, the power of story. But for many foster and adopted children, their life story, it's so sad, but their life story has elements of loss and pain and hurt. Mm-hmm. And so we would just like for you to share with us how to use that power of story. Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think like what you said, story is what connects us all together.
Yeah.
And when I was reading an article by Rick Warren not long ago, and he, it was actually called The Power of Story, and was talking about how Jesus was the ultimate storyteller and that was his favorite way of communicating with people because story, it holds our attention.
Yes.
That engages us, which is an important tool in parenting. It stirs our emotions, which that's what connects us and binds us. And it helps us remember. We learn more when we hear something in a story. And then what science has taught us is that when we understand our own personal narratives, that it makes us better able to connect with our children. It's not necessarily what happened to us in our past, but it's how we make sense of it. So story is popping up in all fields, not only in psychology, counseling, in the business field. I'm seeing things coming up about people recognizing things about their story. There's a book out called Crucial Conversations.
Oh, yeah. David likes that book.
Talks about getting to the heart of them. And again, it's about understanding your own story. And then obviously we all like reading and literacy. All of that is how we connect within our world. So story is extremely powerful in how we change ourselves and how we understand ourselves in the world.
So we were talking before we began recording today about helping our children create their life narrative, which we are going to talk about in a bit, but you said it's just as important and vital for us as parents to understand our own life story as you were talking and to be able to create our life narrative and make sense of that because it affects our parenting.
Absolutely.
So can you explain that a little bit?
The first step in helping your child with their life narrative is actually understanding your own. Mm. This has just been clear over and over in attachment research, because when you can make sense of who you are, where you came from, and what the meaning and purpose is in your life, then you are able to go better and connect with other people and find your purpose. If you don't have that clear narrative for yourself, you're a little bit of a mess sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, and this is a hard process. It's not easy.
Right.
I know you guys are TBRI fans, and this is one of the things that Karen Purvis would constantly hammer home. And she would talk about making sense of your own life narrative. Mm-hmm. And she would say the way you do that is you own your own history fiercely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was her exact word, fiercely. Because when I think of fierce, I think I'm going in there, I'm right. charging at it, I'm looking at it. Because a lot of times there's hard stuff to look at
yeah. right.
that we don't want to look at. And we don't want to see our own blind spots as
right.
well. You also have to be able to release that history with compassion
yeah.
for yourself
mm-hmm.
and for your own parents mm-hmm. or caregivers. And you have to recognize it's a journey. This is not a, hey, I went and talked to a therapist one time,
yeah.
or, you know, I read this one book.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, yeah. It is a process.
It's a journey, yeah.
Absolutely. And it takes multiple steps and time to be able to do that. And then as you do that, you're going to work towards that cohesive life narrative. One of my favorite quotes is from Virginia Satir. She was one of the sort of the founders in family therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that what lingers from the parent's individual past, unresolved or incomplete, often becomes part of his or her irrational parenting.
Mm. That's good.
I know I probably had some moments of irrational parenting.
So I tell this funny story all the time. Yeah, well, you know, we do the things our parents did. And so this young bride, she just got married. They're newlywed. She gets ready to bake her first ham for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. So she takes this big ham they'd saved their money for, and mm-hmm. she just chops the ends off that ham, puts it in her pan, and puts it in the oven. And our new little sweet handsome husband's looking at her, and he's just appalled that she cut off two-thirds of the ham. And he's like, honey, sweetheart, why are you cutting off the ends of the ham before putting it in the oven? And she said, because that's the way my mama always did it. Mm-hmm. And he said, why? And she said, because it's the only way it'll fit in the pan.
Oh, right? That's funny.
So she threw that away. So it makes no sense.
Right.
But it's silly illustration, but isn't that how we are?
Like, exactly. Exactly. You know, and even I did not have my son until I was 37,
mm-hmm.
and I had a doctorate in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
I was a child behavior, quote, expert. I was ready
and
for
then you had
this.
A child.
And
right.
then I had a
yeah.
child.
I love it when that
and
happens.
I know. and I remember, and the way I was trained in my graduate training was very cognitive behaviorally. So behavior consequence. And I remember standing in the kitchen with him when he was 2 years old. And I don't remember what happened, but I'm like, have you lost your mind? And he's like, yes, I lost my mind. And we were both just in that complete irrational moment. And what I realized was that I was focusing so much on obedience
mm-hmm.
that I was forgetting the relationship.
Right.
And then I'm like, okay, I've got to go back and rethink some things, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm a taskmaster and I right. like to get my list and check it off.
Children don't fit in that either.
Children do not no. fit in that. And then because that's how I was kind of my personality was,
mm-hmm.
I had to go back and rethink a lot of things. And that's when I started getting more into attachment work and mm-hmm. understanding where how important that is. And it's popping up in psychology everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All of the substance abuse literature is
yes.
talking about attachment. All of the marital work
mm-hmm,
is
right.
talking about attachment. And it just makes so much sense. And part of learning your own history is trying to figure out your own attachment style.
How do you do that?
Well, there's a lot of different ways you can do that. Okay. First, you need to start educating yourself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four basic attachment styles. And this is based on what they call the strange situation
mm-hmm.
Experiment, where they would have babies in the room, like 1 month or 12 month olds with mothers, and the stranger would come in and they were looking at how they were responding. And you have four basic styles. One is, the first is secure.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the population falls into this secure pattern. And that, like I say, about 60%. And so that's where, with attachment, when a baby cries, the parent comes. You cry, mm-hmm. I come. And most kids do not get the no until about two. Because
yeah.
you're constantly.
Right.
And when you think about it, you know, everybody talks about the terrible twos, but you've been accommodating this child all the way up to 2 years old. And then suddenly you're like, no way.
And they're like, hello.
And they're like, what's going on? So the baby needs attention. You're attuned. You're given. Now, here's the key thing that's really important for a lot of parents, especially adoptive parents, because We think we have to do everything perfectly and the correct way.
Mm-hmm.
In order to have a secure attachment, your attunement level to that child's needs only needs to be about 30%.
Oh, praise the Lord.
That makes me feel so much better.
Yes.
Because in that moment where I was like, have you lost your mind? That was not in the 30%.
That's awesome.
So, but it's you have the parent is attuned, they're engaged, they're responsive, okay? And the baby then grows up and is someone who has secure relationships. Jude Cassidy, her work says you've got to be able to give care, receive care, negotiate your needs, and be autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a secure attachment, those things are easier for you to develop. You then have two insecure styles. One is the avoidant, and the other is the ambivalent, okay? So with the avoidant, the parent's a little bit unattuned. They're not always, they're even less than the 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as consistent. And they really appreciate this child being independent,
mm-hmm.
even before they're ready to be independent.
Children should be seen and not heard, kind of thing.
Kind of thing, yes.
Yeah.
And so, and when you see these babies, they're the ones who, when the parent leaves the room, they're not distressed at all. And everybody's like, oh, look how calm he is. But his little heart rate's beating mm-hmm. and the cortisol level in his urine is way up there.
Mm-hmm.
And when the parent comes back in, they don't really notice.
Mm-hmm.
So they grow up and they tend to be dismissive in their attachment style. And when I see dismissive parents, I see this a lot in the Christian community.
Mm. Why is that?
I think part of it is because we put a lot of emphasis on that obedience thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we fall to our Christian platitudes of, oh, God will take care of that, or this will make you stronger. While there is truth in that, God also wants us to acknowledge our whole selves, our emotions, our hurts. And so we want to make sure we're putting together that picture of we have it together.
Mm-hmm.
We are what God wants us to be. And so we don't allow those upset feelings and stuff to shine through. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. And so we have secure. Then the insecure is we have the avoidant. The ambivalent is where the parent is very inconsistent. They could be really gushing and engaged and then later on totally not engaged. And so there can be a lot of anxiety on the part of the parent about how to caregive. And then there can be anxiety about when a child is dysregulated and not knowing how to respond. So it's just a lot of anxiety that goes on there. That person grows up to be what we call preoccupied in their attachment style, and they're very focused on relationships, like that person who just wants to suck you dry all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Met any of those?
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I love the fact that you kind of assign Charlie Brown characters to each of these.
Yeah.
This cracks me up.
I just found this. So the secure is Peppermint Patty.
She is good with who she is.
Yeah.
The avoidant is Schroeder, the little piano player, because
mm-hmm.
he just sort of is focused on that. The ambivalent is Lucy, because
mm-hmm.
she can either be kind of nice to Charlie Brown or she's stealing his football.
Yeah.
You know, you're not sure what you're going to get.
She's inflicting pain.
Right.
She's either.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the fourth style, which is what we call disorganized.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where a lot of our foster and adoptive kids can fall sometimes. And this is when there has been frightened or frightening caregiving
mm-hmm.
that takes place. And these are the child has no organized system of how to respond to distress and other people's behaviors. That's why behaviors of their children to adoptive parents can be so confusing sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and they just feel at a loss. So it's important for you to understand your own style, because that impacts how you connect with your spouse and your children. So how are we going to figure this out? One of the best ways is to have an adult attachment interview done. Now, I do them in my office. That's not always possible for
right.
everybody. But there is a book called Inside Parenting from the Inside Out by Dan Siegel.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, if you go to page 146 and 147 of that book, there's 12 questions that have been adopted from the adult attachment interview. And it's just a good reflective exercise to go through and be able to think about your your history growing up and with the significant figures in your life. And then another thing is there's some online quizzes. If you Google adult attachment interview or the experiences in close relationship scale, you can do that. Then I have what I call the quick and dirty system.
now that's I relate. That's okay. What I'm saying. Now I relate.
So this is part of all of my interviews with families, okay? Because I'd love to do the AAI with all of them, but that's 3 hours of time, and sometimes we don't have that. But as you know, when we all reach about our 30s in our normal developmental span, we kind of have this shift in our relationship with our parents. Mm-hmm. And what happens is most people will start to have children at that time, and so they start to see from a different perspective.
Oh, I love that. Right. I love that season.
We get a little more grace.
You do.
That
you get a lot of grace.
Exactly. And so there's four questions I like to ask people that sort of pushes you on that trajectory if you're not at the 30-year-old mark or if you're beyond that you can go back and think. The first one is, I want to know, what did your parents do well? Hmm. How did they show you love and care and nurturing? And what was the good stuff that they brought in you that you want to push on? What did they not do so well? And, you know, and for some people, that's really hard to think about that. And I'm watching how people are responding to that question. The third one is, with what they didn't do well, how is that impacting you? Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is, what are you doing with how that's impacting you? How are you moving? What am I doing differently as a parent?
Right.
So can I give you all an example of how I did that for
yes.
myself?
Okay. Yeah.
So
we learn from stories, remember?
Okay, exactly. I grew up in a ministry where we had a homeless shelter, there was a senior adult home, and there was a children's home. So when I grew up, there were about 45 kids, and we had these great – it was like its own foster care community. Mm. And it was a really great place to grow up. One of the things that was super important to my parents was that – this children's home be a place that if something ever happened to them, that it would be a place where they would want me to grow up even if they weren't there. So that was sort of their goal.
Wow, that was wise.
Yeah, that is really wise.
And so they were very loving and nurturing. My dad was super fun. My mom was sort of the more structured one. And so there was a lot of good that came in. But one of the things where they struggled with was being sure there was no distinction between me and the children who had come into care in the home.
Oh, yeah. So you had like 45 siblings.
But sometimes in doing that, it was harder on me, or the standards that were harder on me. And there were lots of conversations that we would have about that. There were apologies from them. And it was nothing like overly traumatic, but it made me very aware of, be careful because people are watching you.
So you were held to a higher standard.
Sometimes it felt like that, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, probably if you talk to some of the other kids I grew up with, they'd be like, what are you talking about? It's all about your perspective. But for me, that was one of the things that I would put in the category of they didn't do well. Mm-hmm. But since then, we have talked a lot about it. And now as an adult, I totally get their perspective.
Right.
That's part of what we call our reflective functioning.
Yes.
Is being able to look at a situation. This is what it was like when I was a child. It felt unfair. It felt too much pressure. It felt all these things. But I can step out of that child view. And as an adult, I can see that this is a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So these are all of the things that you need to do to start that journey towards coming up with your own narrative.
How does having our own narrative or knowing these things, being aware of these things in our own lives, help us to be a better parent?
Because, okay, so let's say if you look and you are a dismissive parent, that's what you determine is your attachment style, then you're going to realize, I need to zero in and be more attuned to what's going on in my child's inner life and their emotional life. Mm-hmm. And so when they come and say, I have a hangnail and it's the worst thing in the world and I don't know what I'm going to do because it makes my hands look ugly, to us, we're thinking, it's a hangnail.
Move on.
Yeah. But in that moment, there are some kids that's incredible. I mean, and that's a really silly example, but something. So if you do have that dismissive style, then you're going to be able to say, this is where I need to ramp up my empathy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So if you have that ambivalent style, you have got to just zero in on your attunement much more, mm-hmm. and just make sure that you have that consistency there, and also that you're not helicoptering and overshadowing what right. that kid's doing.
Yeah, my philosophy is if they come to you with something, everything against in me, because the mm-hmm. way I was raised wants to go, oh, it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. But I've learned to say, I am so sorry that happened to you.
Right.
Even, you know, my little grandchild, I'm so sorry you scraped your knee. It's easier to have empathy for them, though, I will tell you. It's kind of fun. But put some cream on it.
Right.
Yeah. I don't care what kind, you know, whatever it is, find some cream, put mm-hmm. on it. It just seems to give them, and, for, you know, for one of mine was 12 before he came to the family. No one ever did
right.
that for him.
Yeah.
And so it was very important, though he was a teenager and already, mm-hmm. you know, beginning to go through puberty and pull away from mom naturally, right. that I kind of overly gave a little mm-hmm. attention to that.
Yes.
So
yeah.
it took me a while to catch on.
Right. Oh, it took me a long time to catch on, because the running joke at my house was, because I have a nursing background,
you got to be dying,
gushing from an artery before mom says, oh, come here. So when I learned about all this and began learning more, I thought, oh, my word. And then I did have an adult attachment style. Not my favorite thing I've ever done. It's not really that bad, but it just really
just eye-opening,
makes you
isn't it? Yeah.
hyper aware. So now if something like that happens, a skin knee, I find myself saying, I'm so sorry that you feel hurt. Because in my mind, this is terrible. It's kind of like, in my mind, I'm like, this is really not that big a deal. But they feel hurt, and I want to validate that. So mm-hmm. it has made me more aware of looking at my children's needs, or even my husband, when we're talking yes. about things, being more aware of those. So you can move then from an insecure attachment
yes.
style to a secure attachment
yes.
style.
By going through this process of learning it, you can move to what's called to earned secure.
Love it.
And it just takes one secure attachment in your life to move you in that direction.
And the Holy Spirit's so sweet
right.
to speak those things to you, know,
yes.
just that you can build the fruit of the Spirit in
mm-hmm.
your life, because that's how it all comes in. I mean, look at Jesus and the woman in the well.
Right.
You
mm-hmm.
know, once he began to talk with her and he went through her story,
mm-hmm.
he was able to capture her heart when
Absolutely.
She stopped and reflected on my past.
Mm-hmm.
Seven husbands, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you think about how God designed us,
yes.
our brain has what we call neuroplasticity,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
which means that you can create new neural pathways.
Yeah.
Just like our hearts have the capacity to grow
mm-hmm.
and change, not our physical hearts, you know what
right.
I mean?
But
so the way God designed us is to be on that path of moving
mm-hmm.
towards that earned security.
Oh,
so
I saw
I
that. Yeah.
That.
And it's like when you see someone in their 50s or 60s or 70s come to Christ
yes,
for the first
and
time,
change them.
You're seeing a total transformation.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, you know, from 1 Corinthians 13, you know, we just see a total work in their life of what the Lord can do, how
yeah.
it just brings love and the ability to
yeah.
to love unconditionally. We can only do that through Christ.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, and that, to me, that's just a perfect example. But even in my own parents, I remember being around my dad when I had my kids and thinking, this is not the man that
yes,
raised me.
Exactly.
You know, and because he had such a trying childhood.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really tough. But to see the healing that he was able to get through my sweet mom and, you know, learning
yeah.
to raise a family and that sort of thing. It's just been, it's amazing. It really is.
Yeah, true. And if I can make one more point.
Yeah.
Is that when you go through this process and you're identifying your own attachment style, part of that is identifying what is really underlying why you decided to adopt or foster.
Oh, that's good.
So a lot of times we think we have a particular mm-hmm. motive, reason, and a lot of times when we go through this process of looking at our own history, we realize there's something there that does propel us to us.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you have an awareness of it and you recognize that, then it shouldn't preclude you from moving forward from it. But you really need to understand, what is it that is motivating me to be able to do this?
That's a great point.
It is. That's why we talk about know your capacity, right?
Right.
Because when you're like the three of us in this room, you want to rescue everything.
Right. Right. And we can't.
No.
We can't. But I think you're right. People can say, well, the reason that I want to adopt is because it's a picture of the gospel. Many people talk about that, which I agree. But at the same time, is your underlying current, I want to provide something for a child that I was not provided? Or do I want to do something for a child that wasn't done for me? What are those kinds of, what are those underlying reasons? Because they will, parenting children from hard places is challenging and hard, and it's a lifelong journey. And so we just need to be aware of these things mm-hmm. in order to be all that the Lord has called us to mm-hmm. be.
And it's going to pop out whether you go looking for it or not.
True statement. So. True statement. Well, Leanne, our time flies when we're talking about stuff like this. And so I know we've talked about what we should do as parents to explore our past and to create a life narrative for ourselves in order to parent, you know, in a healthy way. But we would love for you to stick around so that we can talk about, once we've done that for ourselves, then how do we help our children make sense of their past in order to be able to move forward?
Yeah, and if this podcast has helped you at all, or you would be just, oh, it means so much to us. It would be so kind of you to share this with your
yes.
friends or your, you know, someone that's considering adoption mm-hmm. or even heard the word adoption or, or foster care. Would you just give us a like on iTunes mm-hmm. or whatever app you use to listen to your favorite podcast? We'd really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us today, Leanne.
Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.